Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Welcome to Resource People Podcast. I'm Tara Diamond and I'm absolutely thrilled to introduce our conversation with Daniel Sweetman, who is the HR and IR Manager for Australian Offshore Solutions, or for those in the industry, AOS. Dan and I have a really fantastic chat because while he is the HR and IR Manager, you will hear that his role is really all-encompassing. If you want to hear what's been happening in the marine sector and the resources and energy industry, or you want to hear a fantastic story about leadership and development within the industry, this is a fantastic episode for you. Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Daniel Sweetman.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. And before we get too far into it, I really want to give you an opportunity to tell us about the background and a bit of an overview on AOS, what it does, who it services, who it employs, all that good stuff.
Look, AOS is a fairly, I guess, young company. We've been around for about 10 years, but we've sort of upscaled in that time. We offer a range of offshore services. We've got a head office in Perth, we've got an office in New Zealand as well. But our core service offering and our main business is marine manning, and I sort of oversee that division. But we also do, obviously, rig manning as well. That's something that we do specialise in. But we've also got a specialist marine services department, which undertakes rig moving, marine consultancy, training, stuff like that. And that's overseen by Captain Glenn Frewitt, which was actually really good for our business. So rather than just being a straight lay, the hire company full of HR people like myself, we've actually got that marine flavour. Actually got marine professionals within the business. So if something happens offshore, I can actually go and speak to these guys and understand it from the technical viewpoint. So that's really helpful as a business and for myself as well. Our other core offerings are offshore catering. That's run by Chris Seidel, who's he's an ex-chief steward offshore, so he knows the game offshore and he runs that part of our business. And that's, you know, supply of catering personnel, food, logistics, all that sort of stuff. And also vessel management and chartering. So we did have a fleet of vessels a while ago. We made a strategic decision to sell those when the oil and gas downturn came along.
Right.
But since then we've done a lot of vessel management and chartering. We chartered four vessels for the Saipem Ichthys pipeline, PSVs, and we managed them, had our safety management system on them. And we've also managed a seismic vessel since then as well. So Ian Del Rosso, a lot of people in the industry would know, he manages that department. He previously ran Tidewater in Australia and been at a few other companies. So, yeah, so overall it's we do offer a fairly broad marine type offering, but I think it sort of complements, as I said, I think we sort of complement each other in our different expertise, not sort of just a one focus in one area. So,
wow. And I'll delve into a bit of that for people particularly that may not be familiar with the marine world. But before I do, and talking of expertise, can't forget that you won the AMA Industry Award for Outstanding Young Professional back in 2011. So that's an entire decade ago, Dan. And I thought, what a great opportunity to catch up on Resource People Podcast to talk about being identified in the industry for your, you know, leadership talent a decade ago. And you were working with Offshore Marine Services back then. So can you give us a bit of a tour of what's been happening in terms of your career and your leadership development in the last decade?
Yeah, I'm probably up for the old professional of the year by now, but it feels like it anyway. Look, that was really nice. I think the nicest thing about getting that award was really the time my peers put into nominating me and putting forward the case for me to win that. And that was probably the thing that I liked the most about it. And it sort of was good for me that I was valued by my peers, which is always something that you really strive for. And obviously it was good reinforcement that I'm a good team player and I really help them in their jobs as well. So that was probably the nicest part of that for me. It's always good to be acknowledged in a public sense, I guess, but it's also if your peers are happy with what you're doing and appreciate you, that's always really good.
Yes, you always hear that on the award shows, don't you, from the big celebrities in Hollywood, that, you know, they always say it means so much when it comes from the industry and from the people you work with. So
yeah.
I guess it doesn't matter what industry you're working on. As you say, having your peers and your colleagues and collaborators identify you and recognise you is just really special.
That's it. You know, you can sit there and say, I got there on my own and I won that award through everything that I did. But really, it's so many people that help you along the way. And,
yeah,
I just want to acknowledge that. So, yeah, I mean, I started at OMS when I was 17 after school. I just wanted to have a gap year between school and uni and I was just doing some admin and, you know, office boys assistant. And I was only really planning on that being just a filler, but never really left. So,
wow.
I was really attracted to the dynamic nature of the industry, you know, like you'd rock up on any day and you wouldn't know exactly what was going to happen. It was fast paced.
Yes.
Days went quick. So that sort of drew me in straight away. And then I went to uni. I did HRIR at uni, which was really good as well because I sort of moved into an IR advisor type role at OMS as well. So that allowed me to apply the practice to the theory. So that was a really good grounding for me. And OMS and Skilled were great. They were really supportive and helped me along the way, again, and supportive of my study. I basically studied full-time and did work full-time for most of it, so it was quite tough, but
yes,
certainly helped me build a strong work ethic anyway. And you get through that, you can get through most things. So that was a really good grounding for me. So, again, it wasn't for Skilled and the people there at the time. I won't go into names because I'll end up forgetting someone, but they really helped me for sure.
And what have you been doing since then? What's brought you to today? What's the last 10 years look like?
So since then, I stayed at OMS until 2013, and then I got an opportunity here as the HRIR manager, which was great. And again, AOS showed faith in me. I was only 24 at that stage, so it was a big role. But I think they could see that I tried to work hard, I had a commitment, and I think that was a good lesson for me as well, that if people are invested, regardless of their age or where they're from or what they've done, if you give them an opportunity, they'll generally step up. So that's something I've sort of carried with me as well, and again, very thankful for AOS for that opportunity. And yeah, it's given me a good start. So long way to go for me, but
that's fantastic. And as you said, you know, fantastic that you were recognised by your peers, but also the judges and things that go into the AMA annual awards. And, you know, your leadership skills at a very young age were identified. And, you know, as you just said, very young going into a senior role. You know, I can't go without really just asking you to reflect on the last decade and what you've learned about leadership, particularly in an industry that is so fast paced, that is so cyclical. You know, it certainly is a mile a minute, really. What have your leadership lessons been?
My job now as a leader is pretty easy because I've got a team for the last 5+ years. We haven't had any turnover and they're just an awesome team. So they make me look good in that regard. I guess, look, the obvious one for leadership is really just doing the little things well and leading by example. So being punctual, dressing properly, it sounds basic. Not expecting people to do anything that you wouldn't do yourself. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, so I get in early, and if I knock off, you know, an hour early on a Friday, I'll expect my guys to do the same. And I think that sort of gives you a bit of respect. You're not expecting them to go above and beyond what you do. That's an obvious one, but I think best leadership is actually getting others to lead themselves. And that's really just empowering people to do their own job and giving them buy-in to their own job and responsibility. So not micromanaging, not hanging over their shoulder every 2 seconds. And it's easy for me to do that. I've got people that are very professional, very committed in my team. But that's certainly the key. I just find if you empower them to forge their own path, they'll step up, they'll get the job done. And that's why I am. I don't expect people to be chained to their desk 8:30 to 5. I don't tell them how to get the job done or how to get to the result that we want, as long as they get there, and how they do that is really up to them. And I find now really it just happens. I don't need to really micromanage or manage too closely. So fairly long process to get to that.
Yes.
It doesn't happen overnight. But what does really help, I think, is retaining people. If you retain your people, you can sort of go through that process together and you don't need to start from scratch.
And I guess your story really highlights the amazing opportunities for young people in the resources and energy industry. In particular, marine industry and maritime industry isn't an easy industry, yet there are opportunities and there's amazing careers available to them. What do you say to young people who are, particularly where you're based in Perth, it's a really big hub for that industry. What do you say to young people about the opportunities that you've had or that you would encourage them to look at?
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the cyclical nature of it before, and I think a lot of people look at the downturns and get a bit worried about coming in to the industry, to be honest. I might see a bit of that. Like most things, you've got to try and look at the opportunity. And I think the opportunity is when you get those upturns, it really provides an opportunity for young people to progress faster than, say, they would in other industries. So
okay,
a lot of positions become available. And look, I'm a beneficiary of that. I think it was fairly busy and I got an opportunity that maybe in other industries I wouldn't have got, that sort of just plod along and you wait for someone to retire or leave,
right,
or whatever,
yes,
or you get that opportunity. But so, yeah, you got to bunker down a bit when it's not going so well. But when it does boom, it just provides a lot of opportunities. And with that as well, it can be very rewarding. So, as I said, it's dynamic. It suits young people in a way that, you know, it's always busy. There's always a lot happening. You need to work hard. But you know, there's opportunities for travel and all that sort of stuff as well. It's a very diverse industry. Like if I go and sit with a client, there's 10 people in the room, there'll be 7 different nationalities and a whole range of different ages. And as I said, I started in a fairly senior position at AOS from a young age. And I never experienced any age discrimination, because I think people are just in this industry are very tolerant of different backgrounds, ages, races, or whatever it might be. So, and that just comes from it being such a global, diverse type industry. So, yeah, I would recommend it. I think it's been very good to me. It's certainly a good career path.
Fantastic. And just talking about diversity of the people, would love to get a bit of an idea. You touched on your HR and IR accountabilities, and then you also talked about the marine manning, the rig manning and the marine services, etc. Tell us what a day in your work life looks like. You know, if people aren't aware of the industry or the types of roles that you undertake there, give us a snapshot.
Yeah, so, I mean, my title's HR IR manager, but to be honest, I've probably got a more of a operational type role. Mm-hmm. So most of my time's taken up overseeing the day-to-day crewing operations of our vessels. So I've got a crewing team under me. We meet every Monday and Friday just to ensure we're coordinated, and then it's just day-to-day standard management with those people. I'm generally the operational point of contact for our clients all operational matters. So I'll attend their weekly, fortnightly meetings and then general interface there. Manage the industrial relations side of it, so all the union interface, do all the enterprise agreements, right of entry, HRMPs, all those things that you and your members would be well acquainted with. And then also obviously the commercial and business development side, I help with the tendering and, you know, if we've got to do a presentation to a prospective client, I'll do all of that as well with our commercial team. So, yeah, it's a pretty all-encompassing role.
It is.
And it can be quite busy, but I think it's, for a business like ours that's got to be so nimble, you've got to have someone that's that conduit between senior management and the people on the front line, between the unions and the people on the front line, between our clients. So you've just got to have someone that's probably...
Sound like a connector, don't you? You sound like an engager and a connector in your role.
I think that's really what I am. And I think it's, you know, because we, as a subcontractor, we work for such large clients that probably aren't quite as nimble. You've got that. We've got to be fully coordinated in where we're at, and that's probably one of the reasons that we actually are engaged. So it is a busy role, but I think it's essential that someone does it in a business like ours. So, but as I said, I like the dynamic nature of it, so I'm not complaining if I...
It sounds like there's probably not a dull moment.
No, there isn't, no. Sometimes I wish there was, but after about half a day of that, I can start to get itchy feet.
Speaking of itchy feet, nobody's had an opportunity to have itchy feet in the last 12 to 18 months. We can't let you go without talking about COVID, because it's affected different industries in such different ways. And with the kind of role that you play with so many different interfaces, you will have got a really good overview in terms of the effect COVID's had on the offshore industry. Can you give us an idea of the type of impact that it's had?
Obviously, our core business is people. So that's been really difficult. And we've got people across the country and across the world that we've got to move around. The marine workforce is spread. We can't just access people from Perth only. So that's been really hard. The issue is something can change so quickly and so dramatically, and then you've got to try and educate yourself.
Like the borders changing.
Borders is the best example.
Yeah, okay.
So that's been really challenging. And I think probably the biggest challenge hasn't been actually dealing with that. It's actually the focus that's taken away from being able to do some of the more proactive things and maintaining relationships with our crew offshore. That's been okay. A huge challenge. I mean, we can't get on boats because of COVID. We haven't been able to see crew face-to-face and stuff like that. So it's been really hard to maintain those relationships. And that's something we focus on, is having a good relationship and good rapport with our offshore staff, which is challenging as it is because they're remote. You can't see them all the time. But it's certainly been a lot harder by, you know, with COVID, that's for sure. So,
and what about rosters and duration? Because, you know, offshore is the typical understanding is that it's long times at work but long breaks from work. And I understand that that's been really challenging with COVID. What kind of impact has it had on people's general roster compared to what either has had to happen, and is it still in place, or have you transitioned?
It's been a little bit of a watch and see, and it's been different for each project and each situation. So we haven't been able to enforce a clear roster across the business, which is hard as well. But I've got to take my hat off to our workforce offshore. I mean, some of them have been away from home since the middle of last year, you know, because they didn't want to, you know, wanted to relocate to Perth or whatever, so that, you know, they didn't get caught up in borders changing at the last minute.
Right, wow.
Some of them are into their fifth, sixth, seventh set of 2 weeks isolation. First one's all right because you can watch every movie that you want to catch up on and all that. But as you get into the
believe it, Dan. You know, when people were first talking about 2 week quarantine, nobody could kind of go, oh my gosh, you know, lots of places around the world, indeed, particularly Melbourne, have been locked down here in Australia. So to hear us reflect on that last kind of at least 12 months, say, first goes a bit of all right, and then it's second, third, fourth, it just seems unbelievable that we can talk about it like that now, doesn't it?
Oh, I was thinking that the other day, actually, some of the things that have happened, if I'd have told you that a couple of years ago, with no stadiums, for example.
People doing 6, 5, 6, 7, lots of 2 weeks in a room isolated. It's just unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And the guys have been amazing. Like, they haven't whinged. They've sort of accepted, you know, most of them haven't, and I wouldn't blame them if they did, but they've accepted that that's just a way of life and they've got on with it. But, you know, we've done everything we can. Again, it's trying to maintain that communication with them. We've started a bit of mental health first aid training for our supervisors. You know, guys go offshore and are feeling a bit lonely. They've got someone right there that can try to help them. And then obviously promoting all our EAP programs and stuff like that's been key. But again, it's been hard because then you're sort of focusing on how do you move people around, and some of that proactive stuff is been challenging to get to as well. So it's been really hard. But I guess as a business, like, we've stood up to it, and it's tested our systems, it's tested our people, and we've come through it, which I think is a great opportunity. And you have said to our people, if we can get through that, we can get through anything. So
yes,
from that perspective, it has tested us and it's been good. You can look at the downside of it, but as I said earlier, I think you always got to try and look at that opportunity, and the opportunity is really to put our business to the litmus test, and we've got through it. So yeah, no, really.
Just on that point about taking the opportunities, and, you know, obviously don't need specifics, but is there anything that you found with people that have been doing these really prolonged times offshore or multiple upon multiple quarantines for 2 weeks? Has there been anything that you've found that has helped your people just get through that? Some companies have said, you know, for isolation, it's been Uber vouchers because of food, variation of food, and some it's been exercise. But is there anything that you guys have found that's been just some simple things that have made a big difference?
Yeah, we have been trying to provide an extra allowance for food, because the hotel food, again, it's like the first couple of weeks is fine, and then it gets a bit repetitive. So even just having been able to go get some Uber Eats food in and get that paid for, the guys have really appreciated that variety. Some of the fitting people, we've tried to arrange some exercise equipment for where we can, and that sort of helped them to to really exercise, you know, get on the bike for half an hour a day just to get the blood flowing. That's been a big one.
And I heard someone say the other day that the people that were quarantining, I can't remember if it was in Brisbane or Perth, and they got a request, you know, for books and for, you know, different things. And one of their people requested a puppy. Like, we were trying to say yes to every single request, but we just couldn't do the puppy.
No, I don't know about that. I know one of the guys, he got stuck, one of the guys here actually, he's got three kids under the age of three or something like that, and he had to come back into Australia with them and and his wife as well.
So did he request a babysitter to go with him?
Oh, I think I think he would have preferred to do it on his own, let's just put it that way.
So, yeah, there's tons, isn't there? There's just so many stories about how people have gotten through prolonged periods offshore or in hotels away from their, you know, support network or even just out of their usual routine.
That's right, yeah. I mean, our guys are fairly tough. They're used to being long periods offshore and stuff like that. That probably has helped. They probably deal with it better than a lot. But, yeah, it's still a very difficult thing and there's only so much that you can do. But that's off to them.
Well, absolutely. They're the ones that have got us all through, right? The people that have had to sacrifice, you know, lockdowns and all the sorts of things. I mean, everybody's sacrificed, but in offshore industry, there's been a huge amount of sacrifice. And I do want to change tack a bit. I've got a couple of other questions that I really want to touch on while we've got this opportunity. And obviously don't want to talk specifics, but I do want to talk to you about industrial relations. You know, you've worked in this area for some time. And I'd just love to know your observations of what have you seen change in Australia's offshore industry in relation to industrial relations, you know, in the last decade or so?
An interesting one. I haven't seen a huge amount of change, if I'm honest. I think it's been pretty good. I think we've gotten better at having a relationship with our people, which I think is the key to any industrial relations strategy, or the cornerstone anyway. You can have all the HR&Ps or the legal strategies, which we do, but you're much better off having a relationship with your people. And if there is a dispute or a disagreement, it can be resolved much sooner if you've got that relationship. I think probably when I started and beyond, it was really us and them. It was basically the union and the company, and the guys work for the union more or less, and that's the way it worked. Where I think as an industry, and certainly here, we've broken down some of those barriers. The union is still very strong and we deal with them on a daily basis, and that's fine. But we're certainly, in terms of individual relationships with our people, I think that's come a long way, and I think that's probably resulted in a better industrial relations environment, certainly for the guys and for us over the period, and I think even in some instances the unions are working with us as well. So I think it has become slightly more collaborative and less sort of adversarial,
okay.
I would say.
That's a great observation. In fact, just touching on your point about relationship with your people, I wanted to ask you about workplace culture, because in your industry, it's not like other industries where everybody goes to the office and everybody sees each other all the time. I want to hear kind of how you think companies that have workforces on different rosters in different sites all around the place manage to create a positive and engaged culture, something that's really challenging. So I'd love your thoughts on it.
It's a challenge, especially for us. I mean, we can't just fly up to a mine site. You know, we can't get to boats most of the time, and that's it's been made harder with COVID. So it's a constant battle. We make sure the simple things, like, you know, we do the catering, so we make sure that the food's good. And one huge thing these days is Wi-Fi. That's almost the most important thing of the whole project, so making sure people have got contact with home and us and all that sort of stuff. And then outside of that, I think it really does come down, again, I'm a huge one for investing in your people to retain them. So you've got people that have been with you a long time. The people in the office have been there a long time. They, over time, they build trust and the relationship. And then it's just things like when we bring new people in, I try at the start of a project, so if we have to bring some casuals in, I try to get them in for a coffee at the office at some point, or I go and see them at the hotel or whatever. And just simply sitting down in a sort of an informal setting, having a coffee or sometimes the occasional beer. Doing that is just goes a long way. It's not overly scientific, and we don't have, you know, the massive engagement programs or anything like that. It's just maintaining the same people and building a rapport over a period of time, getting the basic things right, Yeah.
Yeah. Again, engagement is really coming through strongly in our chat.
Yeah.
And the last area I want to ask you about is around diversity in the industry. You touched on it before that the industry is very diverse in terms of cultures, et cetera, but it is still persists to be very male dominated. And would love to know if AOS is doing anything or has any initiatives about increasing the number of women and in particular Indigenous employees in the sector. Do you have any success stories or initiatives or programs you could tell us about?
Yeah, so obviously with women, it is male dominated and it has been. Traditionally, we've had a fairly strong presence in our catering side of things with women, and that continues. But we are starting to see more women on the deck in the engine room and deck officer positions, so the more traditional positions. And in fact, on one of our construction vessels, we had 50% of the engine room department were female. So we had senior marine engineers, senior electricians, ETOs. Mm-hmm. So that was great to see, and we actually did an article on our website about it and all that sort of stuff, and fantastic for your professionals and workers. And I think it certainly helps. It just adds a new angle to the vessel. I think it helps with the environment on board. And these are young women as well, 20s and 30s, that are really pushing into those roles. We've had some trainees in those positions as well. So it's something we try to promote as much as possible. So yeah, there's certainly some ground being made there, and as I said, we're starting to see young women in less traditional roles. With the Indigenous side, we've actually got an Indigenous trainee program that we run.
Fantastic.
So at the moment, we've got four Indigenous trainees offshore. So we've got two trainee TIRs, which are the sort of the able seamen positions, but we've also got a trainee marine engineer and an Indigenous deck cadet as well. So again, in the past, companies have gone down that road, but I think the focus has been on the more junior positions, the IR, the ABs or catering. What we're doing here is we're actually getting guys into the more senior technical positions. So the marine engineer and the deck cadet, their traineeship will take years, and they've got to go through college and stuff like that. So we're actually breaking some barriers there as well in terms of getting them into those more senior positions rather than just the sort of the lowest level position, and you know, it takes 3 months and away you go. And those guys have been fantastic. We started out, we engaged a third party Indigenous mentor just to work with them, and obviously some of the culture issues and stuff. But again, as we've formed a relationship with them, we're now dealing with them directly. And yeah, I can't speak highly enough of the attitude of these guys. They're doing it for themselves, but what I've found as well is they're really, really keen to do it for their community and show the broader community on what can be achieved with some hard work and commitment. So yeah, we've been very lucky with that program, and it's bearing some fruit. So yeah, it's something we're fairly proud of. Yep.
Congratulations. And on, you know, the perspective that you talked about in terms of not just entry level roles, but really breaking those barriers into the technical and leadership roles sounds really a fantastic approach. So congratulations on that. And before I let you go, I do have to ask you, do you have any career aspirations around what's next for you in your career?
I think the focus is now just helping AOS get out of the difficult period, a few years. And I've always been a believer that you focus on the process and you work hard and try to expose yourself to as many experiences as possible. This podcast is one. I've never done a podcast, so it's been a good opportunity for me to do something different. And I think if you do that, the results of your career will look after themselves. So
yeah, good point.
That's really where I'm at. So, but yeah, great. I appreciate you having me. It's been a good experience, and hopefully.
Well, on that note, I'd like to thank you for joining us. You've been a fantastic guest for Resource People Podcast, and can't wait to see what the next 10 years. Maybe we should put a mark in the diary now to chat again then and see what you've been doing in that period. So thanks again for joining us on this episode.
No worries. Thank you, Tara. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for this episode and this fantastic chat that I had with Dan about what he's been up to and what's been happening in the marine industry. Hope you enjoyed it, and hope you can tune in again soon for another episode of Resource People Podcast.
AMRA acknowledges and pays respects to the traditional custodians of the land from which the Resource People podcast was recorded from today, both the Turrbal and Yugara people. AMRA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which you are living, learning and listening to this podcast from today. We pay our respects to elders both past, present and emerging.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@ama.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.